Marblehead baseball coach Mike Giardi is joining us here at MSONewsSports.com. And Mike, welcome. Thanks for joining us once again.
Oh, no problem, no problem. It's obviously, you know, a great opportunity when you get to talk about your team and your players, that's for sure.
Well, let's just do that. So tell me, give us the midseason update on Marblehead baseball. I know you're about the 500 mark and so on, but what's gone right so far? What's come together for this team?
Well, you know, we're kind of Jekyll and Hyde. I think most of the league is like that right now. You know, besides teams like Masco and Salem and Beverly that are really teams that are been a little bit more consistent, I think everybody's been a little bit up and down. You know, we faced Gloucester, and Gloucester started out a little bit slow, and then we're on a good pace. And we had a good battle with them last week, and it was a great game through five innings, and then we just wore down their pitcher, Zach Morris, made him get up there in the pitch count. But for us, it's just trying to figure out who's on in terms of being on the mound, and also who's swinging the bat really well. And last week we got Ian Maud through a game against Saugus, who was down. They were missing some players, and then Drew Whitman just gave us some really good innings against Gloucester, and then Chris Canusio came in and kind of got us through the rest of the way. It was, as I said, a great game. It's finding who's on, and the hard part is it's not like basketball or football where you can put a guy in and take him back out and put a guy back in. It's, you know, with the substitution rules, it's a little bit different, so you're trying to hope to have it managed and figured out before the game even starts.
Yeah, individually, though, Mike, has there been a player that has really stepped up maybe unexpectedly this year for you?
Well, we went with a couple of different guys this year. You know, in the middle of our infield, Bodie Bartram's done a really good job at second base. You know, Steph Shepard, he was going to be one of our middle infielders at the beginning of the year, banged up his shoulders, diving back into first base the very first game. So he's just kind of come back, but we've been using him just hitting. So he's done a really good job this year. He's got, you know, he's only played in six games, but he's, you know, he's batting close to 500 right now. And, you know, Bartram's really stepped up. He's batting about 400, and he started out a little bit slow, but turned it on. And Shane Keough is going to be Shane Keough. You know, he's probably one of the best hitters in the league. Lefty, and, you know, lefties, as we know, have the prettiest swing in the book. So watching him has been really, really good. And seeing, you know, a lot of other guys, Chris Canusio, Jake Skoglund, just really stepping up when we need them and coming up with some big plays and some hustle plays, which have been really, really big for us.
You know, Mike, what you raise a good question. Why do these left-handed batters have such nice-looking swings? What's the deal?
Yeah, you know what it is. Following, you know, Coach Gridley, God rest his soul, he was always a big fan of Ken Griffey Jr. And as we like to say, the sweetest swing in baseball. And something about the smoothness of it, it seems like right-handed hitters are always fighting themselves, but left-handed hitters, it's just kind of a smooth factor. And I'll tell you, watching Shane swing the bat, even Chris Canusio, who follows him in the order, it's a really, really fluid motion. It's nice. We've been filming a lot of the hitters the last couple weeks, and just watching those two swing the bat has been really, you know, something to watch, that's for sure.
I gotta digress a bit here, but as you look at the Rafi Devers swing, what is your take on his swing?
You know, as I watch him, you know, obviously we tell all our players there's nobody with a perfect swing in baseball because nobody's batted, you know, 1,000%. You know, there's been guys that have just got that smooth knack, and Rafi's just got such great hands, and he attacks the baseball. At times it looks like he has a long swing, but he generates such bat speed, he gets it through the zone. It's something to watch when he's on track and he gets it really going. I mean, there's not too many pitchers that are going to be able to beat him.
No, exactly. So as you look around the league right now, Mike, you've been well-versed in the Northeastern Conference for years now as a player and now, of course, as a coach. But as you look up from the big picture, you kind of gave me the note a moment ago, Masco, Beverly, Salem, but how do you see this league or even a player note or two from outside of Marblehead?
Well, I think that's the thing is you're going to be looking at really all the way down the stretch. There's teams like ourselves, Danvers, that are going to be fighting to get into the tournament towards the end of the year. You know, the same thing, you know, Saugus, Swampscott, all teams that are battling out there. And, you know, it'll be an interesting matchup. I think Masco is playing Beverly today at some point, and, you know, that's going to be a big one. And then we have Masco later in the week. We're finally going to see Swampscott. We'll see some of the other sides of the league as well as we get towards the last week or so. It's who's ever on that day. I don't think any team is super deep. As I said, I think Beverly and Masco and Salem are probably the most consistent across the board. But, you know, you just try to get it all together. You try to eliminate the mistakes that you had at the beginning of the year, and hopefully it all comes together towards the end of the year. But you are hoping that you have enough wins to get in that tournament and you can keep that play going through the tournament.
Yeah, you mentioned Masco. You're playing Masco on Wednesday, hosting them on Wednesday at Seaside Park. And they're, as you noted, they're playing Beverly today. Is the Masco pitching staff loaded, or are they in a similar boat to all the other teams?
I think they have a little bit more experience, a little bit more consistency than a lot of the other teams in the league. And that's a big thing, you know, and TJ does a great job with his guys up there. We had a battle with them last time when we went up there, kind of back and forth, and they kind of slipped away from us at the end. We thought we had a good opportunity. We ran into a couple of base running mistakes that really hurt us. You know, guys just trying a little bit too hard, trying to make the extra play, the big play, and it really hurt us. But we hit the ball well against them, but I just think overall they are very consistent around the zone, and that's the big thing. You know, you got to throw strikes to throw outs. You don't have to throw strikeouts, and they do a really good job of that. So, you know, that's the big thing for them. Beverly, the same thing. They faced us earlier in the year, and we thought we were in a good shape when we knocked out their starter, but their number two and number three came in and just threw strikes. And when you throw strikes, you know, even the best hitters in the game are going to hit balls at people and going to make outs, and that's what we ended up doing.
And two, you know, you're obviously played for Salem years ago, but what a turnaround story the Salem Witches are this year, huh?
Yeah, you know, we felt last year they faced us in a tournament up in Haverhill at the end of the year and had us beat, but they kind of ran out of gas. We kind of wore down their pitcher and got into their bullpen. They didn't have as much depth last year that they do this year, and so we knew they were going to be dangerous. You know, Doyle's obviously a really good player. You know, Rocco Ryan, you know, the Ryan family just in general, just great athletes over the years. You know, as I said, Jack Doyle, Fennedy's a really good kid, good pitcher on the mound. He mixes things up. And when you stop playing with a lot of confidence at the beginning of the year, it just carries and transcends. And they've been able to get some really key victories because of the way they hold themselves out on the field.
Mike, I know you've talked a lot about baseball here. I've got one last question for you, but I'm going to jump to basketball. You watched the Celtics yesterday lose, but it rallied back. I thought it was an impressive comeback in the fourth quarter. But what's your take on this Celtic team? Are they not playing defense throughout the game?
No, you know, it's funny. It's easy to be an analyst from the TV side and stuff like that. I know a lot of people are getting on, on Tatum and Mazzola for the lack of timeout. And maybe the big thing for me is I've noticed at the end of the game, and it goes for most NBA teams, you watch them, they get into a lot of one-on-one ball. I think the one thing the Celtics have been able to do is play great team basketball. And games that they've lost, they've gotten into the last 2 minutes where it becomes a one-on-one battle instead of being that team game. And it becomes a much slower pace. And that's not what they're good at. They're good at moving the ball up the floor and attacking. You know, you get it into Derek White or Brogdon's hands, let them facilitate to JB or JT. I mean, that's fantastic. And then you got Al Horford there as well, and then Marcus Smart. But I think they got kind of lost a little bit yesterday, and I thought they had the right idea of attacking the rim. The pace was just a little bit slower than I would have liked to see. And you saw that in game one as well. They kind of walked it up a little bit. And hopefully they'll be able to get the energy and enthusiasm going a little bit tomorrow night.
Yeah, and it seemed like their urgency right at the very end, speaking of the last several seconds, there wasn't the urgency that you might expect in that last few seconds. But yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind taking it down to the end and trying to win it on the last shot, but whether it was regulation or overtime, a little bit more sense of urgency, moving the ball up the floor and attacking. I mean, we had a game for our year, and I look like a genius because we didn't call timeout at the end of a game before and let it come down to the wire. And we missed the shot, but we fortunately got a rebound and put it back. You know, so I look like a great coach, but it's one of those things that you just want people to go, go, go. Sometimes don't let the defense set. And I think Mazzola wanted that, but they didn't have that rhythm or that sense of urgency to get going. So I think, you know, that kind of threw everybody off. And then it was a little bit too late to call timeout.
Yeah. And I mean, as I think back now, Mike, you know, they were trailing by the point right at the end. And so, I mean, it wasn't as if they, they could have been more urgent to get the second shot, just like just the second chance on the rebound, possibly.
Yeah, and, you know. The question is, do you go for an early score, and then if you miss, you have the opportunity to foul and maybe get another shot at it, or do you wait till the last minute and then take your shot being down one? Either way, I think they should have got it into the front court a little bit sooner, but you know, that's why Mazzola gets paid the big bucks, and I'm a high school coach. I only know a little bit. You know, I know a lot of what I don't know. That's for sure.
Well, Mike, you look like a genius often, as far as I'm concerned. But anyways, Mike, thanks so much for your time and insight, and we really appreciate it. And we'll check in with you soon again, I hope.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Bill.
Yeah, Mike Giardi, baseball coach at Marblehead and basketball coach at Marblehead High School.